There has been some controversy in Vancouver regarding the presence of animal rights advocate Darren Thurston in the activist community. The VNC caught up with Lauren Regan of the Civil Liberties Defense Center in Eugene, Oregon. Lauren has defended several environmental activists arrested during the FBI's Operation Backfire. Darren Thurston was one of those arrested in the sting.
Darren started off as a non-cooperating defendant, and he was part of our team of the non-cooperating defendants. And that seemed perfectly correct given his history as a radical activist and his history of non-cooperation with the government. At some point during that time, and I should mention, you know, Darren was one of the least charged defendants. He was looking at the least punishment of all of the defendants. And that also made it very logical for him to be in a non-cooperation stance. At some point during the pendency of the case, we believe his former lover, Chelsea Gerlach, met with him, got permission from the jail so that the two of them could meet together. We used to mention that, you know, Chelsea had really drank the Kool-Aid and was attempting to get other activists to become snitches with her. And so they met, and the next thing we knew, he was no longer a non-cooperating defendant. And his lawyer and he wanted that to be kept secret. They didn't want anybody to know that he had switched sides, which of course did not occur. And then from that point on, he became another voice, another witness against other activists. You know, so sometimes people say, oh, well, this person didn't give up information that wasn't already known, but that is not the point. The point is, if one person says you stole XYZ, you've got a fighting chance in court to be able to defend yourself. But when one after the other join on the side of the government and are going to be witnesses against you, it makes the burden so much heavier to carry. And not to mention, I think when you're talking about radical activists, when the government sees that they are able to flip radical activists at the snap of a finger, then that sets precedent down the road where then we end up in a situation like Breonna Waters, where the government had flatly stated no non-cooperation deals whatsoever. You will either be a snitch or you will go to trial. And for people like Breonna, she was facing a mandatory minimum 30-year sentence. And because Lacey Philibaum and Jen Kolar and some of the other individuals became informants early on, the government felt perfectly fine in making, you know, those types of parameters on the plea deals that forced Breonna into a very frightening situation.
Did Darren Thurston name people in the information he provided to U.S. federal prosecutors?
Well, certainly he did name names, and unfortunately, the FBI debriefing that the informants provided is under a protective order, and so I'm not allowed to disclose the details of it. But I can tell you it was both indicted and non-indicted individuals.
Is Darren Thurston a snitch?
Oh, of course, absolutely.
Darren Thurston has been working with a movement lawyer in Vancouver. As a movement lawyer yourself, would you hire Darren Thurston to work for your firm?
Absolutely not. And primarily the reason would be that, you know, once a defendant has chosen to become an FBI informant, once they agree to cooperate, their plea agreement binds them to be a cooperating witness, to be an informant for the rest of their life. At any time, the FBI could contact that person and demand that they do things for them, whether that is share emails, make contact with an activist, report about the community's events and whatnot. All of that they could be forced to give to the federal government. And so you know, the crux of a law office is attorney-client confidentiality, this idea that everything that goes on inside a law office is secret. And especially when you're representing activists, that secrecy, the protection of those communications is paramount. And I would not even want anyone to have a thought that that type of confidentiality could be breached. Even if that law office creates firewalls to keep Darren away from certain documents or files, it's still the appearance of it. You know, and whether you're a drug defendant or whether you're an activist, cooperation with the FBI is something that is strongly disfavored across movements, not just the environmental or animal rights movement. And so by hiring someone that is a known informant, and especially hiring them in a sensitive area like computer security, the appearance of that impropriety, I think, is twice as bad as even, you know, what might be actually going on in that office. In particular, putting someone in charge of your computer security when, you know, we know for a fact that several informants were required to forward emails and forward large amounts of electronic documents, including PGP passwords and all sorts of things like that. You know, I would not in any way trust someone who was potentially going to face federal prison time or federal sanctions for not providing that type of information to them.
Finally, how should communities deal with snitches in their scene?
Well, in my experience so far, there's never going to be a way that people who condemn cooperation are going to be able to win everyone over. You know, everyone has their own brain. We all make our own decisions. I think the important point is to try and provide factual information and education about why a non-cooperation stance is important, and beyond just secret underground activists, but why it's important for all community members to have that level of trust with each other. I think it's important for people to be able to show the effects of every single snitch's actions. You know, what were the negative consequences to others as a result of that particular person being an informant? And then at that point, you have to let people make up their own minds, and you have to know that there will always be individuals that will have solidarity with snitches because of pre-existing relationships. And communities deal with that in all sorts of different ways. There are those that are most strictly adherent to non-cooperation who believe that a friend of a snitch is a future snitch, and they will excise out even people who show any support for informants. There are people who will only exclude the informant, and that person's loved ones and support people are still on good terms with the community, under the premise that they don't want to punish someone who's simply befriending a snitch. The response to that by most radical historic movements is that the only way that a radical movement can instill the value of non-cooperation is by there being some kind of sanction for those who make that decision, that choice. Because I think it's extremely important to emphasize the fact that this is a choice. This is a freely given choice. They weren't forced. They weren't tortured like the San Francisco 8. You know, these were people who had lawyers, and, you know, made a choice. And, you know, ultimately in our cases, my non-cooperating defendant clients got an 18-month spanking for being a non-cooperator, but they can come back to their communities with their heads held high. There needs to be, ideologically, there needs to be some form of punishment, in order to continue to have that value be strong. And in terms of being a radical movement, that movement holds no credibility with other radical movements if it is apologist for its cooperators. And so, you know, Southern Oregon, you know, is another community that's dealing with it right now. We've had non-cooperators get out of jail, and now we've had cooperators get out of jail, and they're living in the same communities. And there will always be a few humans that are going to be friends with the snitch. And it's important, I guess, to make sure that when that's the situation, that the non-cooperator is feeling abundant support. You know, the scales should certainly be tipped towards support for that person. I think there needs to be public education and outreach. There needs to be a lot of dialogue. There's a right way to do it and a wrong way, in my opinion. Like, I've seen people go in really militant and almost sort of threatening in their tones. And, you know, if you aren't in lockstep with me, you don't exist on the planet anymore. And I think that tends to have the opposite effect that people are wanting it to have. I think that tends to freak people out and think, well, I'm not a militant, you know, saboteur. I am going to stand over on this other side, you know. And I think enforcing people to take sides, I don't know that that is the most conducive way to continue to have community and improve that community. What we're doing in Southern Oregon, you know, in a couple of weeks, is sitting down with a bunch of people, and I'm going to spit out the facts, and I'm going to tell, you know, what this person did and why it impacted them. I'm going to talk about the history of non-cooperation and why it's important and what the consequences. You know, I'm actually going to show a plea agreement for one of the cooperators and show the words where it says, I'm bound for the rest of my life to be a snitch, so that people understand that, you know, when they're making those choices, you know, that their choices have consequences, and if you're a political person, you need to consider those consequences. And don't expect it to be an immediate change. You know, in working in my own community, there were people who started off not wanting to take sides and not wanting to be anti-informant, I guess. Or they thought, oh, well, you know, poor so-and-so, he had so many charges, it's okay for him to have been an informant. He didn't give up too much. You know, he didn't testify against any. You know, everyone tries to justify their choices. And it took almost a year of having some regular, low-intensity conversations, you know, saying, I understand where you're coming from, here's where I'm coming from, and just kind of having some human interactions over a time period. And we've seen a number of people change their earlier opinions and come to understand and take a different position. And I think, you know, it's a slow, respectful process that seems to be so far more effective in, you know, in getting people to understand those issues, because they're really complex. And
yeah,
when you mix in the human element, you know, people who have been best friends for 15 years and now they're being told that person should be dead to you, you know, I mean, that's a lot. It's a loss. There's a lot of loss that is accompanying a lot of these situations, and you have to kind of, you know, put yourself in those people's shoes and come to understand them. And, you know, it's not an easy situation, that's for damn sure.